and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard to another edition of New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, Michigan, starring Certified Financial Planner, Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Ron. We're kind of watching this storm come in on a Thursday afternoon. It's getting darker. Of course, it is Thursday, the 24th of June. So I'm thinking of the song, The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow, so perhaps that will be the case. It was a red sky in the morning, and I thought, you know, the sailors do take warning, so we'll see. We'll see. So be safe out there, and given the radical nature of Traverse City, Michigan, and what's happening in northern Michigan as a whole, it's exciting most of the time to be a part of it, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Lots of energy going on around here, and we're excited too. And then whenever Ron gives the intro to the show, I always think, well, it won't be long. Ron will have his own mic and won't need to be sharing there with Heidi, and we'll be able to be in the new studio, not too far out. So today we're talking about biases. We've got two more of them we're going to be discussing from the Yale School of Management. The class that I took for the CPWA designation, and Heidi is joining us today, too, talking about some things related
to... Talking about COLA and Social Security.
Social Security and the cost of living adjustments that we may see here yet. And then, of course, we'll be discussing these things back and forth. And Heidi's daughter, Abby, got married this weekend.
She sure did. It was a joyous day.
It was.
A lot of fun.
What a great celebration. Wow. So happy for that. And then Shay will be joining us here a bit later with the Shay Stats. First, biases. First one that we're going to discuss today is called the illusion of control bias. This is a cognitive bias. We'll just call it a brain bias, if you will, where people believe they can control or influence investment outcomes when in reality they cannot. The illusion of control bias contributes in general to investor overconfidence. Investors who have been successful in business or other professional pursuits believe that they should also be successful in the investment realm. What they find is that they may have had the ability to shape outcomes in their vocation, but investments are a different matter altogether. I was actually speaking to our economist yesterday about something like this, and he said, you know, Dennis, I've been doing this for 28 years, 30 years, whatever it is, the time frame, he said. And he said, it's taken me this long to just begin to feel like I've got all the information that I need together to continue to make good decisions about managing money. So these money managers that we hire generally through mutual funds to do these kinds of activities for us can make an incredible difference because of their intense experience, number of years, educations, all of that come together, hopefully, to help them make better decisions than we might usually make on our own. And that is one reason to use a mutual fund, because of this illusion of control bias. Illusion of control bias can lead investors to trade more than is prudent. Trade in and out. Well, I'm going to control. Excuse me, that market. Because I know that it's going down. So I'm going to get out right now and be in cash to earn zero, for instance. Researchers have found that traders, especially online traders, believe themselves to possess more control over the outcomes than they actually do. And excessive trading can result, it says result, period, I wouldn't say that, in decreased returns. The average mutual fund holder, their returns have been in the range, perhaps, I'm quoting from memory here, of 2% to 3%. When in actuality, many mutual funds have returned in the last 10 years 8 to 10% per year. Why? Because many people get in and out at the wrong time. So the illusion of control bias can contribute to that lower return. It can lead investors to maintain under-diversified portfolios. Researchers have found that investors hold concentrated positions because they gravitate toward companies over whose fate they feel some amount of control. Well, I know exactly what they're making. You know, we've all heard ourselves say this. I love their products. Okay, there can be a great reason to own a particular company, but is it a reason to be over-concentrated? As an example, can cause investors to use limit orders and other such techniques to in order experience a false sense of control. In fact, the use of these mechanisms can often lead to an overlooked opportunity or worse, a detrimental, unnecessary purchase based on the occurrence of an arbitrary price. So part of this can lead, you see, to lower returns. We're trying to control too much, perhaps, and not taking advantage of perhaps others who may know a bit more than us or have a greater depth of experience. So again, that can really be helpful to us in using or utilizing other money managers who would help us to avoid that. Now, for instance, in the international markets, I've had clients say, and rightly so, well, you know, the returns over in Europe, given their whole strategy, their economic control strategy, I don't know that I want to invest over there. Well, we've discussed money managers who take a look at these things, and they have said, we believe that's where the internationally, we'll use that as a general market area sector, it has a much better rate of return potential over the next 10 years. And rightly so, given the research that they've done. That's where that can make a significant difference. So ceding some of that control that we can tend to want, as long as you're able to ride the ups and downs of these things, can really enhance returns over time. Because we've frankly probably talked about this as well. If you're allowing these money managers to buy when the market has come down because you stayed within that mutual fund, that's what they're doing. They see a sale on where you and I perhaps see fear. And given that opportunity that they see because they live and breathe this stuff every day, that's where the benefits can come in allowing them to go ahead. They've got some cash in their portfolios, let's say. They're going to employ it by buying a company in the energy sector, as an example. And if they did that earlier this year, the energy sector is a great example of something that was... we had some saying, well, surely this is the end of the energy industry, you know, at the beginning of this year. And it's amazing how wrong they've been because, of course, oil is crude, as defined by crude, or the WTI, is what, in the $70 per barrel range right now? Whereas one gentleman said to me a couple of days ago, well, you know, a year ago it was a negative 35 and now it's 70. I like that difference because it certainly has helped him and his business. And Ron is showing me exactly the price right now. Thank you, Ron. 72.71, down 0.51%. Thank you. The bastion of the journalist right there, embodied in Ron Jolly. So, isn't it interesting? Honestly, I had this information all highlighted, and for me personally, it was a great learning experience to help me think about some of my own biases as it relates to managing money and or allowing it to some of it to be at risk and employing those diversification strategies and the expertise of others to help. The next one is hindsight bias. This, we can kind of guess what that's about.
Well, they always say hindsight is 20/20.
Cognitive bias, where investors perceive investment outcomes as if they were had been predictable. Well, I knew that was going to happen. Even if they were not, sometimes gives investors a false sense of security when making investment decisions, leading them to possibly excessive risk-taking. And we've all seen this. So I know, given the current outcomes expected within the technological sector, that XYZ company is going to the stratosphere because they have the corner on the market on robots. Well, then somebody else comes along, you know, whatever company it is, and they develop a robot at half the cost and can go twice as fast. You know what I'm saying. So the bias type, existing beliefs. When an investment appreciates, hindsight biased investors tend to rewrite their own memories to portray the positive developments as if they were predictable. Over time, this rationale can inspire excessive risk-taking because hindsight biased investors begin to believe that, they have superior predictive powers. What's happening tomorrow, dear? I don't know. I'll think about it, and then I'll tell you. When in fact they do not. The bursting of the technology bubble is an example of this bias in action. The technology bubble in the early 2000s, when these internet companies got priced to such a degree that there was no possible way that there was any potential for them to continue to appreciate, because they'd gone to such an era or price of unbelievability that they had to come down. They had no choice. They had to fall. Hindsight-biased investors also rewrite history when they fare poorly and block out recollections of prior incorrect forecasts in order to alleviate embarrassment. I didn't really believe that, did I? You know?
Well, those stories aren't as fun, Dennis, when you're sitting around the table. It's more fun to say, I bought Apple when it first came out than to say, well, I bought this company that went out of business when it first came out.
And you're never going to hear that story at a party, right? Well, I was so wrong when I did this. This form of self-deception, in some ways similar to cognitive dissonance, prevents investors from learning from their mistakes. And then a clear example of this bias took place in the early 80s when energy stocks generated over 20% of S&P 500 returns. Lots of investors were caught up in the boom, and by the early 90s, the energy bubble subsided and many stockholders lost money. So these things, you know, when there's blood running in the streets, as we've heard, perhaps it's a great time to invest. Hindsight 2020, energy was a great example, and that could continue to be a great example here going forward for a time, right? They can unduly fault their money managers when funds perform poorly. Looking back at what's occurred in securities markets, these investors perceive every development as inevitable. How then could a worthwhile manager be caught by surprise? In fact, and I thought this was a great example here, even top quartile managers who implement their strategies correctly may not succeed in every market cycle. They're not going to if the prices are moving overall in that market against them. Managers of small cap value funds in the late 90s, for example, drew a lot of criticism. These people weren't poor managers. Their style was simply out of favor at that time. So that's pointing out the importance of diversification in any given strategy. You can have the best money manager in the world. If the tide's going out, as they say, all boats are going to go down, and there you are. All right, so Heidi's going to be discussing COLAs, and then I'm going to be talking after that about generating tax-efficient retirement income. Shay's also going to be here for the stats, but first of all, Heidi, hit it, if you would, on the COLA for Social Security.
So COLA, like Dennis mentioned, is the cost of living adjustment. And why is that important? It's important to people receiving Social Security because that is the adjustment that they look at on an annual basis to see if they're going to bump up that Social Security payment for recipients. So the Senior Citizens League has been looking at this with the current economic inflation and other influences going on in the economy, and they are forecasting at this time that COLA could be as high as 4.7%. And so what does that mean in dollar and cents? It means that for someone who receives about $2,000 a month, that would be about a $94 difference. And for someone receiving a $3,000 a month benefit, that's going to be about a $141 difference. So this is sort of startling for us in the financial world because this would be the second steepest COLA since the 1990s when it was 5.4%. There was only one year, 2008, that has exceeded a 4.7% mark, and that was a 5.8% increase there in 2008. So that's why it's sort of a important thing to look at for us, is because it might have more of a material difference to people. So when will this happen, and why is this just a forecast? Because this is done from third quarter to third quarter is the year that they look at. So in October of 2021 is when we'll probably hear for sure what that number will be. And so we still have a couple of months of activity that will be taken into consideration with that COLA number. So this is just sort of a heads up. It could be, but there also could be some things that happen that might change that estimate. Some interesting things when you think about getting more in your Social Security check, you have to remember, but the reason that's happening is because costs are going up. And one of the biggest costs right now that I think all of us have noticed is gasoline. Gasoline and home heating oil has leaped from 20.2% increase to 22.2 from March of 2020 to March of 2021. So that is a big jump in heating costs and gasoline. So that is just an example of some of the prices increasing over that time.
So for each of those respective years, what you're saying is they increased 20% in 2020 and mm-hmm. about 22% so far this year. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Is that what that means?
So
okay,
just showing that, you're going to maybe get more money in your check, but you might be spending more money in other areas.
Certainly. Expenses for just about everything have gone up. The prices, rather, have gone up significantly. Yeah,
correct, because the fastest growing costs for seniors are prescription drugs, Medicare Part B premiums, and other out-of-pocket medical expenses. And they tend to outpace the COLA adjustments. So it's just keep that in mind when you get that raise in your Social Security check. If you do, that costs are going up as well. So you want to take a look at your budget. Not just the income side, but the expense side as well.
Indeed.
Yep.
Indeed.
So that comes to us from Ed Slott's group, the Social Security newsletter that we got this month.
Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that, Heidi. Yes, Ron.
A quick question. Does the COLA ever go down?
No.
No. Never.
Yeah, we've, I was going to say we've never had a negative inflation rate, but it's been a long time. Some might refer to that as deflation, but I don't know that the CPI has ever been negative.
Yeah, but it's been a long time since the COLA adjustment's been this large, is what the article was talking about.
Usually we see 1% to 2%. Yeah, we may be as much as 5 or so. Nice change for those who are on fixed incomes. And that next, how to generate tax-efficient retirement income. It's important that you can, as you go about converting your assets into income, that understanding the significant tax implications. However, it's not just about the tax implications. It's about the the investments that you have to produce that income. So you want to combine those two. What are the tax implications going to be? Now, that's probably the largest cost in relation to any decision we're going to make about income, retirement income. Should I draw from my Roth IRA, my regular IRA? Oh, yeah, I also have a 403B there where I used to work. You see what I'm saying? Or you may actually have a regular brokerage account where you have mutual funds in that. But by a regular brokerage account, I mean an account that's not in an IRA and not in a 401K or a Roth account, whatever that might be. It's a brokerage account that you might traditionally own with a spouse if you're married or on your own, but you own that outside of that retirement account. So part of that decision may be, where do I draw it from, and can I avoid the tax, and should I avoid the tax? Yes, Heidi.
Yeah, and in the financial world, we call that a non-qualified account. Yes. Or it, really, that's a fancy way to say a regular account, like Dennis was saying, an individual joint account, trust account, something like that.
And that really points up the importance of getting advice. It's not just about the tax. It's about looking at all the trees in the forest. It's incredible as you look at all those things. Well, someone might say, I've done a pretty good job saving. I got this account here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Which should I draw from, Dennis? Well, given the width and breadth of the 12% bracket for joint filers, just to dive into that, taxable income up to $81,000 this year for a couple is taxed at a 12% rate. That's, I'll just say it, that is a screaming deal. So think about that. You may decide to draw some more income in especially these early years, if you're retiring right now, that is taxable because you want to pay the tax at those rates because we anticipate. John Sluice was talking about this maybe a month ago when he said, I can say this without qualification. All of my clients believe taxes are going up. So I would say, you know, I don't always go with what everyone is thinking. Obviously, we get that, but it certainly appears as though tax rates are increasing here in the next few years. Yes.
Well, I was just going to mention, Dennis, that a lot of times you and I will talk with our clients about how it's good to have these different types of money, the Roth money, your traditional 401k or IRA money, which is pre-tax money, or your non-qualified or regular accounts. Because if you have those three different pots of money and the tax legislation changes, mm-hmm. it makes it more flexible for you to pivot to take advantage of certain scenarios, right?
Yes, indeed. And then the other part of that is you may have a fixed investment account, a fixed annuity that makes a lot more sense to draw from for income than the mutual fund that you own. I'll just say it, TIAA CREF is a huge investment provider, consultant, if you will, for those in the education establishment. Well, the TIAA portion is a fixed annuity that offers a tremendous number of guaranteed income options for retirees. Many times we'll look at this for those we consult with clients, as an option for drawing income, even though that's taxable. Because it's in a regular 403B account, as we refer to it in the industry, even though, you know, they may have a Roth account, taking it taxably may make the most sense because that particular instrument works very well for drawing retirement income in many cases. So part of this depends on the tax. Part of it depends on the instruments you have within those accounts to generate that income. And are you thinking or looking at the future for that income too? That's a critical part of it. We don't want to be beholden to the weather to help us direct what we're going to be doing for our retirement income. What I mean by that is we understand the weather can be, we're going to have a variety of weather in the next week, but you don't want to rely consistently on the weather to make you determine what you're going to do for the day. You want to be flexible in that determination, and you also don't want to be beholden to something that could go down by 10 to 20% in the period of 6 months, just when you need to draw income from that particular investment. Okay? Does that make sense? I think it does. Okay, good. So the next part of this is, you'd like to build, generally, if you built a healthy mix of assets across taxable savings and brokerage accounts, tax-deferred accounts, and tax-free accounts, this is when it just makes it much simpler to make these decisions. And then next, since Roth IRAs are funded with after-tax dollars, not only are those accounts not subject to RMDs, required minimum distributions, they're not subject to them. So you don't have to worry about that 72 limitation on the Roth. They may be monies that you want to draw later. And or given that you have a spike in income where you still need some more income to help augment that, still taking that from the Roth in that year.
Well, Dennis, that all ties back into talking about those tax brackets, because if you have like a large expense that you have to pay for, you could do a combination withdrawal, maybe some from the Roth and some from another source to try to keep you in that same tax bracket so you don't bump yourself up into a higher one.
Exactly. So whether or not you decide to do a Roth conversion may be based on the time that you can keep it in there, whether or not you can pay the tax, number two, and where your bracket is today, and taking advantage, full advantage of that 12%. Then which assets should you draw first? The answer will depend a great deal on your particular goals. And this is a great thing to talk about and discuss with your advisor. If your main focus is on tax-efficient income, you may want to consider starting with distributions from your taxable accounts. Then next, number two, moving on to your tax-deferred accounts, and finally then taking withdrawals from your tax-free accounts. But next, if on the other hand you're hoping to leave a significant legacy to the next generation or even the second generation, we understand where the grandchildren lie in the perspective of things, don't we? Your income-generating strategy may require a bit more planning. And you see what I mean by that as we discuss those issues as they come out. And sometimes you just can't believe.
Speaking of grandchildren.
Yes.
Hi, Papa. I love you.
Just a quick quote from Maeve.
And there the legacy planning comes in, right? Changes.
I don't know. I always think of those rabbit trail things in the middle of these dissertations, but you get it. So, you know, how important is legacy? And for some, that can be critically important of helping with education for these grandchildren, helping them get to the next level, helping them see where perhaps you haven't been able to, and or go to schools that you only dreamed about going. You get it. That's where there can be some real passion and focus around saving. We have those clients, and we welcome those conversations. So we're probably at a break time, are we not here, Ron?
Yep, and we just had a quick question. What year was the lowest percent cost of living allowance? And I just looked that up. You have that there, Hannah?
No.
I've got the COLA was zero in 2010, 2011, and 2016. And in 2017, it was just
0.3%. That's pretty low.
Wow. Pretty low.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You're talking about possibly this year 5?
Yeah, that's why this is big news.
Big news.
You bet.
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
And I'm the other financial advisor, Heidi Thompson.
And I'm Shay Pataja. I put the fun in financial.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
All right, welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design. Mr. Dennis Prout's in the studio with Shea Pataja is in the studio from Prout Financial Design. Welcome back.
It's great to have you here, Shea, doing the Shea stats.
Yes. Are you ready for them? This one is kind of mind-blowing. I can't really wrap my head around it. So, Dennis, maybe you can. The Treasury Department maintains a checking account, a.k.a. the Treasury General Account, with a minimum balance of $150 billion. As of Wednesday, June 9th of 2021, the Treasury General Account had a balance of $730 billion. The U.S. government is forecasted to spend $20 billion a day during the fiscal year of 2021. And, of course, that stat is from the Treasury Department.
$20 billion a day, huh?
The USA has has officially been in a recession since February of 2020. The next most recent U.S. recession ran for 18 months from December 2007 to June 2009. The official declaration of that 2007 to 2009 recession had ended was made on September 20th of 2010, or nearly 15 months after the recession's official end date. And that's from the National Bureau of Economic Research.
2020.
Perfect.
I just love, we do one more time. So good. 2020. All right.
2020.
51% of the $64.2 trillion forecasted by the Biden White House that the U.S. government will spend over the next 10 fiscal years, so the fiscal year 2022 through and including fiscal year of 2031, are outlays for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. 51%.
Wow. Wow. So those programs, obviously, causing a significant amount of expense.
It is.
And we're going to have to see some corrections made in those programs in order for those to continue in the future. Or, you know, changes in the estimates or, you know, even in the age for Social Security recipients, for those who are younger. We've talked about that. Wouldn't it make a ton of sense? So someone who's 40, if they knew they weren't going to get benefits at 62, now for someone who's 40, it's going to be 65. If they knew it was going to result in a Social Security administration that was that much more solid and stable, wouldn't that give them the confidence to say, yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. My gosh, you know, when they first started this program, a significant part of the population didn't even live to 65. Mm-hmm. Now that most people do, we've got to change the estimates or the ages at which somebody may collect. I think they'd all understand that. So, yeah.
It's tough, too, because even if, I mean, I think folks always say, I'm going to work longer, but the stats show that they don't.
Yeah.
People
Many
always,
times
yes.
the decision is outside of their control.
Right. Health or the career, that position's being eliminated, or you just lose steam. You've been doing a certain career for X amount of years, yeah. and you just lose steam.
I mean, you see a certain number of those, too. You know,
yeah.
I'm done. Yeah.
So, a lot of reality checks coming up.
Sure.
The U.S. deaths from COVID-19 over the prior week, measured Friday to Friday, were 2,231 as of last Friday, June 18th, 2021. That's down 90% from the 23,180 weekly deaths recorded as of Friday, January 15th of 2021.
Wow.
And that's from NBC News.
From January to June.
Mm-hmm. We're down
90%. Incredible.
Yep. All right. Well, this is an interesting one. No turning back. 42% of the 1,046 full-time American workers surveyed in early March of 2021 said that they would quit their jobs if their employer did not allow them to work from home permanently, and they would seek new employment with a company that does. And that's from Prudential's Pulse of the American Worker Survey. Well, that just tells me, too, that people
maybe weren't in the right career to begin with, that they do like the online work from home, or they've made it work. I don't know. Yeah. Lots of revelations happened last year.
Yeah,
we'll just say that.
Lots of adjustments made that could never have been anticipated. Some people would call them cataclysmic. Some of those adjustments have changed the economics of work and its environments forever.
Mm-hmm.
We're finding within our own office, we can have a few people work outside, but most of those staff situations need to be in office, because many times those conversations are intense enough in making certain that we get things mm-hmm. right. I'll mm-hmm. just say it.
Yeah.
That has to be a face-to-face, or
sure.
making certain that we understand each other. You know what I'm saying, you know?
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Makes a difference when it's face-to-face versus online or videography, if you will. Yeah.
Yeah, there's certain energy that's lost on the Zoom exchange.
Yeah,
it's
no
not quite
kidding.
The same.
Yeah.
As of the close of trading last Friday, June 18th of 2021, 8 Americans are worth more than $100 billion each. The richest of the 8 mega billionaires was worth $200.5 billion, and that's from Forbes.
And who was that? Who was that person?
I didn't want to say it on the radio, but I guess since I'm here, it wasn't me.
Is it Bezos?
I would guess Bezos or
Zuckerberg.
Zuckerberg, possibly. I don't think it's Zuckerberg.
Musk, Elon Musk?
Musk, the Musk man.
Mm.
It smells so good, you know.
Uh-huh, honey.
My other favorite sounder, thank you. The average car on the road in the USA at the end of 2020 was 12.8 years old, up from 10.2 years old as at the end of 2005, and that's from IHS Market.
These cars mm-hmm. are lasting longer and longer, aren't they? They just build them so much better.
Yeah, well, you know, a used car, get a good one.
Yeah.
Keep her going.
Oh, my
That's
gosh.
What I say.
Maintain
Here's your Shea
it.
Stats.
Run it. Thanks, Shea. Appreciate it. By the way, you already know this probably, but we love doing this show selfishly. This is really fun. And Ron, you certainly help it make it so. It's really an enjoyment.
And we like it when you dance like that.
For us to do this
that's
with
why
you.
I'm on radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Radidio, as you say. All right, so distributions, we've got a bit more time here and lots to talk about. Some distributions will be required. Most retirement accounts today, with the new law, require you to draw at the latest by April 1st of the year following the year in which you turn 72. Generally, you're going to want to take the first distribution in the year in which you turn 72, unless there's some other alternating tax issues where you really don't want that income. You have to take two distributions in that year if you do wait. Is that what you were going to say?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Otherwise, you're taking twice.
Yeah. So you'll take them twice, but you'll take two distributions, but you theoretically, not even theoretically, you actually do have until the year after your turn, until April 1st of the year, rather, after the year in which you turn 72. Now, we process all of our clients' RMDs for them through our office to make certain that they've taken the proper amount, and for those that want to do qualified charitable distributions as well. Now, even though the age requirement for RMDs is now 72, you can still do a qualified charitable distribution at age 70 and a half. That's just to keep people like us in their jobs. It's called job security. So I can do what? What? I really? I can do that? Yes, you can.
I mean, why would you want them to match? Because then you'd only have to remember one
number. That would only make way too much sense for most folks. Yeah. Then next, think about the long-term tax picture. People generally assume they'll be in a lower tax bracket during retirement as their income decreases. And I just wrote next to that, nope.
Nope.
Most likely not anymore, especially because all those little deductions that you may have been able to receive that are no longer running around are not at home anymore. Mm-hmm. So because of that, and probably with the new tax law, you can't write them off anyway, it's not your deductions, whether it would have been for mortgage interest and if they changed the laws and all that thing, that sort of thing, whatever, because you have fewer deductions, and most likely because taxes will be going up, the fact is most likely your taxes won't be lower in retirement.
So, Dennis, maybe a good example could be where you do sort of a combo effect. We've done this with clients where you might take your required minimum distribution, take a monthly distribution for that income until you hit that required minimum distribution, and then you may switch the remaining amount of time, the months that you have left in the year, to maybe a non-qualified account or a different account to try to keep that taxable income lower. But you do still have to look at what you're liquidating, because there's capital gains tax, and we can go on, and it just gets a little deep. But those are some of the strategies that you really have to take a look at.
It's really interesting. Quickly, the order of withdrawals, generally, number one, your annual RMDs, two, cash flows from your taxable accounts, the interest, dividends, take that. Three, principal distributions from taxable accounts, bank withdrawals and investment account sales, and lastly, distributions from tax-advantaged accounts. That's a general rule of thumb, which can be helpful in really taking a look at that. Basically, it's understanding the sensitivity and the strategies that you can employ make a significant difference in these retirement accounts lasting that much longer for you.
All right. Remember, you can listen to the full broadcast Saturday mornings, 9 o'clock here on WTCM Traverse City of New Retirement Radio. And you can find copies to listen to at proutfinancialdesign.com. Thank you, Dennis Prout and Heidi Thompson.
Appreciate it, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Have a good day.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.